Well, thank you so much, readers. Sometimes the great texts can seem kind of familiar to us, so they can fail to move us so much anymore. And that's where an oral reading like this one or a fresh translation can really help. So I took a tip from our fearless Neyland news editor here, and I picked up a copy of the newest translation of the Bible this week. It's called the First Nations Version, the First Nations Version. It's this indigenous translation that honestly has just brought tears to my eyes. There's just something about the tone of its storytelling that's really honest and humble. And the way that it does the names, like native names, draws the meaning of them right out. For instance, Jesus is called Creator Sets Free. And Paul's letter to the Philippians is titled Small Man to the Sacred Family in the Village of Horses. And those are actual translations of the true meanings of all those names. But Paul means small man. Interesting, isn't that? It's not how I tend to think of the great apostle. His letters dominate the New Testament, more like a proud King Saul. But no, Jesus gave him that new name, which meant small and humble. And Philippians means lovers of horses, which were the chief advantage that you had in warfare back in that day. So what might small man say to that proud Roman culture? But before we get too far into it, let me just read to you a sample from this Bible. Here's our text from First Nations Version here this morning. Walking the road together. As you walk the road with the chosen one, have you gained from him courage for the journey? Have you found comfort in his love? Do you share together in his spirit? Has his tenderness and mercy captured your heart? If so, then have the same kinds of thoughts. Love with one heart, join together in one spirit, and walk side by side on one path. This will make my heart leap for joy. But when you do these things, make sure that you do them for the right reasons. Do not let selfish ways take you down a path of bragging or trying to look better than others. Instead, let humility be your guide as you honor others above yourself. Each of you should look to the needs of others, not just to your own. Think about yourselves in the same way Creator sets free, that is, Jesus, the chosen one, thought about himself. Even though Creator sets free has always been the same as the Great Spirit and shared everything equally with him, he did not even think of holding on to this in a selfish way. Instead, he emptied himself, became nothing, and gave up all that he had. Then, having been born as a human being, he took on himself the lowly form of a servant. As a true human being, he lowered himself even more by following the guidance of the Great Spirit, even when death was waiting for him at the end of the trail, death on a tree pole, on a cross. Because Creator Sets Free did this, the Great Spirit gave him an honored place above all others and bestowed on him a name greater than all other names, so that all who live in the spirit world above, on the earth below, and underneath the earth will bow their knee to Creator Sets Free in honor of his name. Then everyone in their native language will shout out loud that Creator Sets Free, the Chosen One, is the Grand Chief over all the earth. This will bring honor and praise to our Father, the Great Spirit. Village of Neyland, Village of Neyland, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, I was only a few weeks into my preaching internship back in 2008. When this older gentleman came up to shake my hand at the door. "Vel domine," he said in a thick Dutch accent, "that was a good word, a good sermon, but you have a very big problem. Your posture is terrible." My back straightened. He didn't like my posture? Well, I didn't like his attitude so much. So what if I slouched? I mean, why shouldn't I lean a bit on the pulpit? But you know what? Rude as he was, old Herod was right. The way that we hold ourselves is important on both the outside and inside. From our physical posture to our mindset to our whole attitude on life. Yeah, straighten up in those pews. You see, there's a lot of ways to frame Paul's message here, the main thing that he says to the Philippians. Translators have struggled to find the right word. Is it more of a mindset or attitude, more of a disposition or an outlook? Clearly, it's not just a mood or a fleeting emotion. And it's deeper than a thought or idea we all can agree on. Paul says it in four ways here. You must be like-minded, have the same love, be one in spirit, and one in purpose. In fact, later he uses the same word with Euodia and Syntyche, two prominent women in that church, pleading with them to come together, to be of one mind in the Lord. And we don't know whether their dispute was more doctrinal or practical, but what is clear is that is Paul's posture there. He's on his knees there, begging them to come together instead of taking one side or the other. He's trying to show them Christ's posture. His attitude. And what was that? Well, I often use this image whenever I teach catechism to remember the shape of Jesus' story. How he came down from heaven and he emptied himself, he humbled himself, and became human. Down, down, down came Creator sets free to serve as our servant to save us from death on that tree. So the great spirit raised him back up to a place where every knee shall bow and one day hail him as chief. See, this is the shape of both this Philippians 2 passage here and also the Apostles' Creed we read this morning. And you can see it in his arms in this artwork also. Look at his posture there. Look at the shape. But see, that is not just the shape of Christ's journey, but the shape of our journey, if we follow his way in our lives, that humble you must dominate all of our relationships. But is your life shaped like that? You know, I tremble to think of all the ways that my life isn't yet. And yet remember, he shares our yoke. We share this yoke with Christ. As Jesus said, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. And yes, a yoke is actually shaped like that also. Arguably, America's greatest theologian, Jonathan Edwards, once said this about our posture. He said, a lamb-like, dove-like temper is the true disposition of our Christian hearts. And you know the great thing about that posture? When troubles come up or when tensions arise, it isn't prone to divide. No, pride divides, but see, humility unites. And that's the medicine that small man offers here to this village of horses here in Philippi. This gospel medicine to cure their divisions and their pride. But pride? If you've ever read Philippians, then you know that this is the church that Paul is most proud of. It's a church that gives and gives generously. A church that had its act together. Or did they? I mean, what if we read between the lines? Because why would Paul say be like-minded unless they were arguing and couldn't see eye to eye? And why would he say do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit unless those were some horses that they actually loved to ride? See, there's a few things that we know about the city of Philippi here that can clue us in a bit more to their mindset. How privileged they were, but also how petty they could be at times. First, Philippi was a major outpost on a major highway called the Ignatian Way. It was a road that basically connected the entire continents of Europe and Asia. So they commanded a tremendous trade and commerce for the Romans, and they even had gold mines of their own. They knew they were something because they were rich. They were important. In fact, Philippi was such a prized possession of the Roman Empire that the Romans had conferred a special status on its citizens. They were given what's called the Ius Italicum, the full rights of native-born residents of Rome. So the culture there was heavily influenced by ranks and titles. Theirs was a world-class city in a world-class empire, they thought. They were fiercely honored, couldn't help but feel a little bit superior. Plus, Philippi had yet another claim to fame, another claim to glory, if you consider the history books. They were named after Philip of Macedonia, the father of a great man who we have even heard of still today, Alexander the Great. It was from Philippi that Alexander rode out on his great war horse, Bucephalus, to conquer most of the known world in their day. Talk of selfish ambition and a vain conceit. And with all of this in their culture, can you see then the problem here, what the problem might be here in Philippi? Why they couldn't get along, why they couldn't reach full joy or full unity? This was their problem. They clung to their pride. They clung to their honors. They wouldn't come down from their high horses. They were so busy proving their rights that they were trampling on others. Talk to anyone who's lived through a church split, and they'll tell you it isn't really our differences that divide, but our dispositions when others catch in us a whiff of smug ambition or selfish pride. Think back over your worst feuds, and you'll realize it wasn't the disagreements themselves, but people's reactions to them that caused the most bitterness and hurt. That's what left the deepest grudges and the deepest divides. In taking sides, they lost their minds, this attitude, this mindset of Christ. And just raise your hand if you've never been there before, because I know I have, loads of times. But again, what brings us together is to be human again, to be humble again, in just this way that Jesus here showed us. To come down off our high horses, lift up others from the mud. And yes, the Haitians at the border come to mind, don't they? Because it takes an attitude of superiority to treat people that way. It takes a whole mindset, a shared system of caste. Some of us are reading the book Caste right now by Isabel Wilkerson, and I just got to this chapter where she leaves us with these two harrowing examples, these two horrifying tales. Let me just read them to you, these two sobering paragraphs. In the slaveholding South, some in the dominant caste grew so accustomed to their embedded superiority built into their days that they wondered how they might manage in the afterlife. Is it possible that any of my slaves could go to heaven? A dominant white caste woman in South Carolina asked her minister. And must I see them there? A century later, during World War II, the public school district in Columbus, Ohio, decided to hold an essay contest challenging students to answer the question, what do we do with Hitler after the war? And a 16-year-old African-American girl thought about that, then won the essay contest with a single sentence, a single line. Put him in a black skin and let him live the rest of his life here in America. Do we still face castes, systems of inferiority and superiority that are built in? We certainly do today yet as well, and they might be even worse than back in Philippi. But remember the answer, the medicine that Paul gave them. Remember that mindset, that posture. It all begins with Christ, with humbling ourselves as he did. Scott Jose makes a beautiful observation. He says, notice this, pride always isolates, whereas humility connects. Pride isolates while humility connects. Pride is interested in self at the expense of others. whereas humility is interested in others at the expense of selfie. So pride divides while humility unites. It connects. In fact, I think of that scene, and yes, you guessed it, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Rings, where Elrond summons everyone to a great council to decide what to do about the ring. And before long, their tempers flare up and their prejudices ignite. I'll die before I see it in the hands of an elf. The fellowship sunk so long as they let their pride take the reins. But then Frodo, the smallest of all of them, who's already suffered so much to bring it there, says, I will take it, though I do not know the way. And only that humble hobbit has the power to unite them. Only on humble grounds can we all really agree. So it is in Christ. Humility is the attitude that leads. In fact, I still remember this time in my high school when my ethics teacher asked us, what's the most essential Christian virtue? What one virtue would you say should set all Christians apart? Pick one, then write an essay about why you think it's the most important, and come to class tomorrow ready to argue why yours is right. But while most of us went for the usual suspects, faith, hope, and love, the fruit of the Spirit and such, one quiet girl, well, she thought otherwise. And after she read her paper on humility to our class, we all just sat there stunned in silence. I mean, who could argue with that? With that one word, humble, she blew us all out of the water. In the ancient world, humility wasn't such a prized virtue, though. It was a rather uniquely Christian one, first. Aspire to be humble, ha! The humble just gets stomped on, that's all. But then still to this day, many think of it as the mindset of losers rather than the one that's really going to win it all. The meek shall inherit the earth, Jesus promised. God lifts up the humble. We've got to stop setting our sights on the best, the biggest, the brightest. No, you really want to know how to spell joy? They taught me this back in Sunday school. J-O-Y stands for Jesus, then others, then yourself. Humility isn't thinking less of ourselves, but it is thinking of ourselves a little less, you see. Not just looking out for our own interests, but also those interests of others. How do I measure up? How do I distinguish myself? How do I stack up compared to all my colleagues and friends? See, those things don't trouble the humble, because they take their worth from heaven. They know who they are in Christ and that he counted them worthy even of dying on that cross. Creator sets free has taken care of all of that. As Chuck Swindoll once wrote, to me, this attitude is more important than any facts or circumstances, more important than all education, money, successes, and failures. It's more important than what other people think, than all appearances or giftedness or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, or a home. Friends, shape your life to this mindset, this attitude, this posture. It's the only way to win the real argument for good. Jesus has proven us that his greatest victory was in humility, so that every knee shall bow and one day confess that he is chief, he is Lord. Would you pray with me? What a mystery, O Lord, that you would come to us in such humility, and that through your death, you would restore our broken world. Teach us your meekness. It is not weakness, but it is strength to the core. And teach us your majesty. It is not proud and does not boast. Christ's name we ask this, and all God's people say together.